How will blockchain shape the world that we live in? How can governments regulate something that most world leaders fail to even remotely understand? These are questions I've personally had, and today I'll be touching on these topics with a very special guest. My guest today is the CEO of the Global Blockchain Business Council, the world's leading organization supporting policymakers and business leaders in implementing and utilizing this groundbreaking technology to create a more secure, equitable, and just society. This is Sandra Rowe from the Global Blockchain Business Council. Enjoy. So thank you, Sandra, so much for coming to this interview.
Thank you.
And welcome to MIT. Is it your first time here?
No, it's not my first time here. It's probably my third time, but first time since all of the COVID, obviously, situation.
You studied at Yale before, right? You did your undergrads in military history, if I remember correctly.
Yes, very good memory. I did military history undergrad in environmental studies at Yale, and then I went on to study a bit of computer science at Columbia. And then I actually went to LBS, London Business School, for business.
So that's an interesting transition. So history, computer science, and then business. How come you chose that path?
I think just in general, I'm a curious person. And so lots of different things interest me.
Well, it's always good to try out different things, right? Because you just get a bit broader perspective.
Absolutely. And now in the interconnected world that we live in, you're beginning to see the convergence of economics and money with geopolitics and technology, which is just fascinating.
Studied at Yale, then next thing you worked at was Morgan Stanley, Deutsche Bank. Can you tell us a little bit about these experiences?
Yeah, I never thought that I would end up on a trading floor. I will tell you that when I was studying at Yale. And then I worked on a project where I worked with Morgan Stanley, and some guy said to me, would you like to have an entry-level job doing derivatives? And I knew nothing about derivatives on the trading floor. And that's how I got started.
So how did you feel like the trading? I mean, it's very, very dynamic environment. I've worked for DSHA myself, so I'm also a bit familiar with it.
Yeah.
How was that experience?
So the trading floor for me, and this was way back in the late 90s, starting as a woman, very young, on the trading floor. My first week, I almost got punched in the face by accident. Traders got into a fight because there was a bad trade, miscommunication, bad trade. And I was walking along reading my paper like a studious little analyst, and I almost got decked. The head trading was very upset with them, threw them out, and then looked at me. I was like almost in tears, and he said, are you okay? And I said, yes, I'm fine. And I learned to withstand a lot. I think the trading floor helped me to gain confidence and actually learned a lot of soft skills as well as hard skills. Don't get me wrong, I appreciate all of the quantitative skills I learned, but I think I also learned how to collaborate in a very quick, stressful, tough environment. And that was very valuable for life.
Trading floors are something really interesting.
And there's an energy.
Yeah, there's so much energy. And I think back then in the 90s, it was still much different, because nowadays, DSHA, people tend to be more, which is a good thing, more polite, more all of that, but there's still a lot
no
of energy.
No punching each other, that would be good.
But back then, I mean, it must have been like in the movies, you know, people running around fighting.
So one of the funny things I will say, this was right during the internet boom, and it was 99, 2000, I believe. And I remember thinking, wow, numbers just keep going up. And everything just kept going up. And every day the stock market just kept going up because there were more and more ICOs. And it was just, or IPOs, I should say, IPOs.
It was before ICOs.
I spent too much time in the crypto space. IPOs, and people didn't think that the stock market, especially the young people and my colleagues, I mean, people were becoming very rich very quickly. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is just so crazy. And you're right, a lot of that exuberance quickly fell out once the stock markets crashed. But for the time being, but I will tell you also, like, computers were obviously used, but it was a time when I literally saw people still writing trade tickets on pieces of paper that were like carbon copy. So there was like a white copy, a pink copy, and a yellow copy. I still remember that to this day, thinking, is that how we record trades? And it was.
At that time, it was just a few companies that were doing algorithmic trading. I think it was DSHA was one of the first.
It's just the beginning. You're absolutely correct. Yeah. No. So a lot of what has happened, all of this like technological advancement, I realize, really it's 2000s. It's the last 20 years, really.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. I mean, nowadays, most of the trades, at least at DSHA, are actually performed by computers, and the people who program them aren't, you know, the typical men in suits running around the trading floor. It's like some physics PhD nerds who just code their computers.
It's a very different world. You're absolutely right.
It's very much about the high frequency trading, where if you use optic fiber cables, at the speed of light, information travels in 1 nanosecond roughly this much. That's like 30 centimeters. And I've seen them trying to optimize their trades as much as possible, even shortening these cables so they can get to the computer at the stock exchange quicker. It's crazy.
Oh, and also putting your servers right next to the places where the market infrastructure has their servers. It's actually quite amazing to hear. But that's the slight edge that you might get.
It is. I mean, if your trade comes in even just 1 nanosecond earlier because your cable is this much shorter, might make a big difference.
And so for me, I do wonder, is that really fair? And what kind of world do we live in when that matters that much? So that's not for me to say.
And this also brings us forward to what you're doing now. So now you're the CEO of the, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Global Blockchain Business Council.
Yeah. It's a mouthful, yes. I say it every day in order for me to be in practice. The Global Blockchain Business Council, we are actually Geneva-based. We started actually on Sir Richard Branson's Necker Island Blockchain Summit in 2016.
Did you meet Richard Branson ever?
Yes, several
times.
He is a wonderful, not only billionaire and entrepreneur, but he's actually a humanitarian in many different levels and cares about many, many different topics for society. We got together with a bunch of entrepreneurs and started a nonprofit in Switzerland with a very singular focus initially, which was to educate government officials and executives around the world who don't spend their time in blockchain and crypto and unpack in a very pragmatic, balanced way what are the facts and what is good and what is not so good about the technology or what's going on. Mm-hmm. So we try to be the most neutral as possible, but we still advocate for the technology, but trying to bring balanced views of the pros and the cons.
I'm still curious about Richard Branson, so I basically worship him. He's like my business god, let's
say. Maybe later I'll show you a photo.
That would be great, I'm really curious. So,
yeah.
So how did he even get involved in this?
So basically he has an island that he owns called Necker Island, many people know this, mm-hmm. and he has had events all throughout the year, and this has obviously happened a lot more frequently before COVID. But basically we would take out the island for the whole week. We always coordinated with his team when he was on the island, and he would spend the days with us talking about blockchain and the environment. A lot of the topics that we covered at Blockchain Summit were related to how do we, as 40 people who've been invited to come together, create companies, create projects, create initiatives. Humanitarians showed up. We had former world leaders show up, billionaires, tech entrepreneurs, very different people coming together and trying to say, how do we either work on sustainability or helping refugees or a myriad of topics.
He does, it's interesting, he does a lot of crazy things. Obviously, he did travel around the world in a balloon and so many stories.
Yeah.
I think he also bought the island just for very little money. He got it from some broke prince or something like that. I read his biography, so I remember that. But it's interesting, so he supports so many very fascinating, mm-hmm. both humanitarian and technological projects like to help humanity.
And just in the most recent, I don't know if you know, but Virgin Unite is his charitable arm. And we were working with the head of Virgin Unite to support what was going on in Afghanistan during the mass exodus. And we were trying to get some of our blockchain teachers, mainly women and girls, mm-hmm. who were learning in our schools in Herat through, there's a woman named Roya Maboub who works also closely with the family. And her girls are part of the Afghan robotics team. I don't know if you remember that, but they came to the U.S. But she was the first tech CEO, and the Taliban actually put, I forgot what they call it, but they basically were going after her because she was advocating for technology and education for women in Afghanistan. So he's been a part of all of that too through Virgin Unite. So there's just a number of mm-hmm. initiatives, yeah.
The situation is really bad right now in Afghanistan. I mean, even though initially they promised that women would still have access to education, it doesn't seem as if it is going in that direction.
No, and sometimes, I generally believe that one should try to abide by rules and laws, but when things are wrong and you know they're wrong, you have to go rogue. And frankly, there are a lot of underground schools right now. And sometimes it's the only way we can educate and support these girls and women, and we'll continue to do so. I think you need to stand up when you think things are wrong. And for women and girls and boys to not be educated is a wrong.
So let us talk about blockchain then in general. So you just addressed this problem right now. Obviously, there's a big trading going on with Bitcoins, with Ethereum, with all the cryptocurrencies. But what do you think, how long is it going to take that we can actually buy everyday products using cryptocurrencies?
So, in the United States, there are pockets of places around the world where you can, or in the country where you can. So for example, if you just go north from here in New Hampshire, you can actually use Bitcoin and Dash in quite a few shops in Portsmouth. And that's been going on for a number of years, but it's not mainstream, it's not everywhere. And I think that is where we are not at that tipping point yet. I think people still buy it to speculate more than anything else, or to hold on to it as a store of value. But I think for every country, for every situation and community, there may be a different reason to use the crypto. For some countries like El Salvador, the president has decided that it's legal tender and has made it legal. It's actually been put upon the people that you must use it.
Oh, wow.
So it's not really a choice, right? It's kind of like you're using it. For most other countries in the world, it's a choice. And then I think for a very small other group of countries on the other side, it's banned. You cannot use it. It's actually illegal. So it's very interesting, depending on where you are, what countries have decided to do about crypto. I think where I find crypto the most interesting is just even thinking about the beginning of the story. So Bitcoin is now is the oldest crypto, but I think people forget it is the most secure crypto. It is network. It has never been hacked. People have tried to hack it, don't get me wrong, but it has never been successfully hacked because it is the most secure. But there's a trade-off for that. And for all the arguments that people make about, for example, the energy usage, well, there are pros and cons to the most secure network in the world, which is it does actually consume a lot of energy. However, does that mean that it won't eventually go full renewables? Actually, that's exactly what direction it's going in. And I hope it actually pushes a lot of other industries to go in that direction. So trade-offs, like what are you willing to accept versus the other thing, right? And I think that's where it becomes very nuanced.
So the Bitcoin is a mining-based currency, which means it is necessary to kind of pollute the environment for some time until it's actually all mined. But there exist cryptocurrencies that aren't so much focused on the mining. That might be better in this case.
So like I said, proof of work is the consensus mechanism, which is the mining component. And, it uses energy, but so does everything else, right? Every device we're using uses energy. But I guess the question is, it's the degree to which it's using energy. The other ones that people talk about that are now proof of stake, for example, that consensus mechanism, those tend to be the equivalent roughly of, let's say, using a home computer. So most people use computers.
Yes.
So that, that's fair energy usage. I think we all overall, in terms of the energy portion, and I'm very, very focused on sustainability and renewables and pushing people towards how do we make this more efficient, is really figuring out as a community, a global community of computer users, device users, we are taking up energy every time we use a device. How do we make sure that all of that energy is actually increasingly renewable, to where we are majority renewable? I'm a pragmatist.
Yes.
I don't believe in a world where we're gonna go to 100% in the next year. We're not, it's just not possible.
It will take some time.
It will take some time, but we need to push it forward faster.
So, but with cryptocurrencies, one thing that I'm always a bit concerned about. So obviously for my energy at home, I have the option of getting renewables. It is a bit more expensive, but that's something I would consider. Mm. But for cryptocurrencies, your profit margin, if you mine, is very, very narrow. And if I would just use my regular computer here, I wouldn't be making any money. So when people like actually farm Bitcoins, they have to find the electricity that is the cheapest, which unfortunately is often not the renewable energy, right?
So yeah, it's a complicated topic in the sense that that's focused again on proof of work and mining. If you're going to do proof of stake and you're using any of the other blockchains, whether you're going from Algorand, which actually is based out of Boston, or half a dozen other blockchains that are out there that are not on the same proof of work network, it's a very different probably scenario. But for proof of work, it does and mining, it's now full-scale business. It is really an infrastructure business, and that business does need to seek out the cheapest form of energy. But having said that, there's been a lot of advances, and I encourage anyone who's interested in the crypto mining portion to read some of the papers that are out there about the pushes towards renewables, especially since a lot of it's come to the US and to Canada and to the Nordic countries. There's thermal, there's solar, there's a lot of additional energy usage that's pushing towards, and again, over time, towards renewables.
Mm-hmm. What do you think for young entrepreneurs are, what has potential for starting new companies in the crypto and blockchain space other than just mining bitcoins? I'm sure there's a lot of potential.
Yeah, no, I get a little frustrated. I'll be very frank with you, Samuel. Sometimes I've been in this space for like 10 years now, and I'm a proud crypto boomer. So on crypto Twitter, people call the people early old crypto people, not OGs anymore. Apparently we're boomers, which is fine, whatever. But what I find frustrating is, you know, the cryptocurrency topic is incredibly important, but there is a much wider scope that people need to look at, which is the technology itself and decentralization and Web3. And what I mean by that is, as we decentralize different processes around the world, there are applications everywhere. Government, digital identity, healthcare, energy, supply chain. The tracking and tracing component of what blockchain does, which is pretty boring if you think about it. It's like you took a database, you distributed it out, and now everyone's ledger and information updates at the same time. It doesn't sound revolutionary, and it's done securely. However, it is, because we all need to share information, and if we can share information in a distributed, secure, verified. So even if you're, if I'm a cheater, you don't, it doesn't matter because it won't verify on the network. You're almost protected in the network from bad information, or hopefully you are protected from bad information if the verification system is good. Long story short, if we all have that same information being updated at the same time, it's valuable. Whether you're talking about financial services or health records or government records, these are all very valuable things.
I'm also very curious, so quite recently you spoke in a committee of the US Senate and there was some discussion about cryptocurrencies, and you pointed out two countries, Estonia and Switzerland, for being good role models for their regulations. Can you tell us, like, what is the current stage of countries around the world, how they're accepting cryptocurrencies?
Yes, so I specifically told the US Senate Agriculture, Nutrition, and Forestry Committee, which by the way oversees the CFTC and provides funding for the CFTC. And the discussion was obviously around digital assets and how much the CFTC should be regulating.
It was funny
crypto.
To see the senators calling like digital assets and not actually understanding what is behind it.
I hear you. There's a lot of still education to be done, but they are much better than they were a couple years ago. So I applaud the staffers for educating their senators because they sound much smarter than they did a couple of years back. And they know a lot more now. But having said that, I think the cryptocurrency discussion is really, I think really coming to a head in the US because of the urgency. They're seeing how big it's getting. And they're not worried about it right now at 2 trillion market cap. They're worried about it going to 200 trillion market cap, right? Which is possible.
And they cannot regulate it.
Well, they are trying to. So I think they're trying to come to a consensus on what that looks like. I think for the US, it's very clear. There will be regulation. The question now is, what is the extent of the regulation and what does it cover? For Switzerland and Estonia, the reason why I brought those two countries up is because I long admire both, not just because GBBC is in Switzerland, but because when you are clear as a government, as a regulator, as a central bank about where you stand on things, it helps innovation. And Switzerland has been a clear leader in this space about where they stand on definitions, how they categorize the tokens, and what they are willing to accept as innovation, and what the rules are for penalties when you are not abiding by rules. They have licensing standards in place. You have to get a license for certain activities, but these are clear. And when things are clear, you have things that are wonderful, like Crypto Valley that springs up over the last decade. Zug, I will tell you, I think most people in the world were not familiar with Zug 10 years ago.
Small city in Switzerland, yeah.
It's small city in Switzerland that is now the heart of crypto. It's called Crypto Valley for a reason, right? So anyway, to me, those are examples of where you can have innovation flowers, because you will have heard some of the senators very focused on how do we continue to encourage innovation? How do we make sure that people don't go anywhere else? Well, guess what? look at what some of these countries where people are flocking to have innovation. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, I'll be very balanced. There are other issues about setting up a company in Switzerland, which are very separate outside of crypto, but on crypto regulations and rules, excellent.
Yuri, so I actually own a company in Switzerland. What do you think, or what is in your view the problems with Switzerland? Something I haven't figured out yet.
I've already complained to our many Swiss lawyers about this. No, there's just certain laws, like wet signatures just make no sense, especially during COVID. I was flabbergasted. We need secure encrypted signatures. Switzerland can put that in, but they need to change legislation to do that.
Yeah.
I should not be FedExing and spending $100 to send a actual hard copy signature.
I mean, they have like the option of getting digital signatures, but I think I had to spend like $2,000 on getting authorization for that. And then, you know, might as well just physically send it somewhere.
Well, exactly. So I wish they would change that law. I've been lobbying.
But other than that, Switzerland seems to be a bit like the US. It's quite simple to open a company. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to bother you with taxes until you make a certain amount of money per year. But then again, the problem is a lawyer costs, you know, up to $1,000 an hour.
Yes.
And if I just need to get something done as a, you know, somebody who has a little startup, well, now it's a bigger company, but back then it was a little startup, it was just something that's almost impossible.
I don't disagree with you. The cost of a startup in any country is still too high. And I'm glad there are incubators and accelerators. That helps a little bit, but we need more.
Yeah. But in the US, it's easy. I mean, opening a company, an LLC, you can do it like this on the internet and pay $500 and it's done, basically.
Sure, that is true. Yeah. You're right. And Estonia, I have an e-residency, and they also allow for, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but they have a secure card that you receive once you've been approved. And you can open up a company and you can electronically sign all of your legal documents to start your company, and you never have to even visit Estonia. It's very interesting.
It's very easy. I actually looked into it very actively with a friend who wanted to do some trading scheme. And we thought like it would be good to have a company in Estonia for that. We didn't do it in the end. I don't actually know why. I guess we didn't have the time for it. But so essentially you don't have to physically go there. Yeah. And you could just open a company.
I find it amazing. I called it a company in a box, meaning they like literally you get a box of the key card and they literally give you instructions for how you could actually like start your own company. They even have a list of lawyers you can hire to do the legal work. It's all very simple.
And it's an EU country, so nobody's going to say, oh yeah, you have that letterbox company on the Cayman Islands. It's really some tax fraud. It's an actual regulated country.
And then separately, PwC came out with a report of how many hours are saved, man hours are saved because of the digital platform. And it's amazing. And some components of blockchain, not all of it, but some components they've started using blockchain, but it's just fully digital. It makes the citizens' lives so much easier to access. Instead, in the US, I have to call the IRS. You can never get a hold of them, even if you get a letter to try to respond, because they don't answer the phone.
Unless they want to get a hold of you, then you can't get rid of them.
At that point, it's too late, and you can feign like, well, I tried to call you 15 times, but it doesn't matter. They don't care. Anyway, it's a very different structure, and I don't buy the argument that it's such a big country like the U.S. that we have to have all this bureaucracy. I actually use the other argument. When your country is this big, you need to streamline bureaucracy. Yeah. It's absolutely unacceptable to have this level of bureaucracy. Mm-hmm.
Some concrete advice for startup founders who are interested in anything related to tech, blockchain, fintech, which countries should they consider for even opening companies if they can't do it in their own country?
That's a very good question. We are in the blockchain crypto space, and I think most entrepreneurs are. We're the most mobile friendly, meaning we can go anywhere, and we will go anywhere where the jurisdiction either, you know, resonates with us personally, or whether it's good for taxes or for creating a company. I would say the top places in the world from a legal and tax perspective is an ease of doing business, probably still a combination of Singapore, Switzerland. The UK has definitely taken a little bit of a stumble, but I lived in the UK for over 10 years, and I still am a fan of doing fintech in UK in particular.
Revolut is there.
Yes, and Wise, I think, is also there. So, they've had a lot of good payment companies coming out of the UK. They'll come back. And even the US. I know the US seems very awful sometimes, but I think...
Still have physical checks to pay stuff for.
Yeah, trust me. Yeah. On the payment side, perhaps not.
It's a disaster.
but you just want to laugh. I came from Europe back to here, and I just shake your head. Just like, how are we back in this
place? Welcome to the 20th century.
Yeah, exactly. It's just shocking. And then I know for some people this might sound weird, but I would look at far-flung places too. Like Portugal has a package now for crypto and blockchain entrepreneurs, and it's a very friendly package. And you can become a citizen, which means you're part of the EU, which is very attractive as well. So I know there are people in Portugal. There are now people moving to UAE. Because that's becoming very friendly, and also Puerto Rico. If you don't want to deal with mainland U.S., a lot of people are moving to Puerto Rico mainly for tax reasons. and then there's pockets in South America, and I tell people don't forget the rest of the world. There are still pockets of really cool innovation going on. So Brazil, for all of its maybe other issues, it's a huge economy, and they do have some very interesting things going on. And the government of Rio de Janeiro is very focused on inviting as many tech entrepreneurs to come. They're putting together very friendly packages for making it easy for entrepreneurs to come.
So where do you see the world in 10, 20 years in terms of payments? Do you think these cryptos are really going to revolutionize everything, or do you think it's going to take longer?
I am, you know, having been in this space for 10 years now, I am both optimistic and concerned at the same time. I think cryptos are here to stay, so get over that. Everyone who keeps saying that crypto's gonna die, just please, let's put that to bed. I think whether it takes over fiat currency, I think it's coexisting. I think it coexists because depending on the country, you may need it for different things. And in some countries, they will stick with their fiat and they will just use crypto as another means for other uses. Mm-hmm. And I think people should just be willing, and government should be willing to see where this goes for their particular country. What I worry about is the concentration of wealth that we are repeating in this version. The whole point of when Bitcoin started, and the reason why many of us got into this space, was to actually help distribute opportunity and access and wealth. And I hope as this pie keeps growing bigger, it doesn't just keep getting concentrated with the hands of a few, because at the moment, it really does feel that way.
Good. Thank you so much for your time, Sandra.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in Boston.
Thank you.
And I hope to see you next time.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Samuel.